With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
What is up, everyone? Jose Young, show the MMAfighting.com. After, it's been how long? It's been like a week since we've done one of these shows. We've had fights, so we've had to step back.
We have actual fights. People punching each other for money.
Wednesday to Wednesday is what we normally did until this quarantine pandemic and fights were canceled. But we are back. This is, of course, the ASAD Live Chat. Joining me is my usual partner in crime on Wednesday. I don't know where he is on your screen. He's on my... I don't know. He's on one of my sides. And the other side of me, of course, is Casey Lydon. No guest fighter this week because we've had a million fight interviews. We've had a million scrums. We've had a million post-fight presses. We've had virtual media days, whatever you want to call it. So we're just going to talk fights between us. Of course, this is not our show. This is your all show. You can go on Twitter, use hashtag the A-side, or just reply to the tweet in question with the link, or you can go on the site and leave your question in the comment section. The green ones will, of course, be prioritized, but if it's a good question, we'll ask it. And Casey's running the YouTube comments, so if he sees a good question, he will pull it up. Oh, you know Casey Lydon, of course, because you've seen him I don't know how many times this week on various preview shows, weigh-in shows.
Way too many.
People are starting to wonder, like, wow, who's this new employee you have? Little do they know he's been working for like about 12 years. But Pete, I'll start with you. How's fight week been for you across the pond?
Yeah, it was big. It felt big on the night. But I can tell you, a lot of people are talking about, oh, the fighters aren't conditioned the way they used to be, etc. I'm not conditioned to stay up to 6 o'clock in the morning anymore. I'll tell you that much. I had a whole packet of hot dogs in 1.5 hour kind of gaps between them to keep myself awake throughout the process. But we got there in the end. Thank you. I deserve that. It was. I put on a half a stone in total, so 6 pounds to 7 pounds I put on in one night. I'm very proud of that.
Hey, Petey, stop avoiding the tough questions. Right there on the screen.
What's my favorite Subway sandwich?
What is your Subway's favorite Subway sandwich?
I think they all taste like ass.
All right. Well, there goes our Subway sponsorship. Jeez, man.
Big fan of ass, though. Big fan of ass.
All right, off to a good start.
Casey, what's fight week been like for you now that we have fights? You've been busy as ever now that you've been manning.
Man.
You're usually here, so this is one of the first North American pay-per-views you've not been at in how long?
Since 103. Since my first UFC I actually worked at was UFC 104, which was in 2009. That was Machida versus Shogun 1. And since then I've been at every single North American pay-per-view. So the streak is broken. 249. COVID-19 got me. I couldn't make it. So it was interesting watching it from home. Watching a pay-per-view without pants, you know, so it's different. It's a change of pace. I'm living the Pete Carroll life.
Woo! I heard you set up the camera and interview the dogs after it just so it would feel normal for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was Fezzik's response to the Justin Gaethje's win?
Oh, she said it was rough.
Rough?
Oh, yes. Come on.
And Rubella, what'd she say?
That's all I got.
That's all I got. Come on, man. But anyway, we got questions. I mean, you have questions.
Lots of questions.
We have a lot. It's been a long week, guys. I'm, of course, still in Jacksonville. I'll be at UFC Jacksonville later tonight, and then UFC on ESPN, whatever, on Saturday night. I lose track of these. But Casey, what is our first question from our lovely listeners?
Oh, wait a minute. You've asked us how we are. How are you, Jose?
You've been
stuck in a room, socially isolated. Like, tell us.
It's because we didn't put a coffee talk out on Sunday. It's weird, man. These four walls are just I'm in Jacksonville, but I don't feel like I'm in Jacksonville. I pretty much only see people in the hotel. Like, I see fighters walking around, like going to their rooms and coming back. I see fighters going to get food. I see UFC staff. I see one or two media members. So I've been seeing the same assortment, ragtag group of individuals for about a week now. And I can't wait to get home, but work has to be done. The COVID-19 scare is for real. Everyone is wearing masks everywhere. Like, if you see someone not wearing a mask, you're kind of put off by it. You're like, "Why? Where's your mask, bro?"
Unless you're
apparently dead. there's some AEW wrestlers in this hotel too. I think I've seen one or two, but not too many. But it's a weird situation. It's a weird vibe. As my microphone falls down. I can't describe it. You could tell me I've been in this hotel room by myself, and I would I'd believe you. I see so few people. We can't really leave the premise because nothing's around, even if we wanted to. Like, there are signs that say do not leave the premise unless you absolutely have to. And then I tried to go to Walgreens because I needed some batteries. And the Walgreens is one of those Walgreens built into an ER. So I'm not going to go into an ER whatsoever. So I was walking around, and there's like a beautiful body of water right here. There's a nice drawbridge. I walked over the drawbridge and back, and there's just no humans. Everything's closed. All the offices are closed. All the restaurants are closed. All the bars are closed. Everything is – there's no life where we are. There's rarely any cars. There's like a handful of bike riders. We see a bunch of yachts and like sailboats and jet skis and everything. I even saw a dolphin yesterday. But
hey, see, it's – there's some good news. You saw a dolphin.
I saw a dolphin, but I can't lie to you. It's the isolation is for real, and it's very odd. It's a very odd feeling.
Can I ask you a very important question, Jose?
Hit me.
What's the room service menu like? Let's get down to the real things.
Oh, I don't get room service, my man. There's a market downstairs that has like various like sandwiches or flatbreads or chips or sodas or anything. So I've been doing that. There's one restaurant downstairs that's open. There's only one. I assume that's where room service is, just that tiny menu. It's not bad. I live in the middle of Arizona, so fish freaks me out in Arizona. So anytime I'm on a coastal state or city that has actual access to seafood, I'll eat seafood. So the seafood's not bad, but I'm kind of tired of that place, honestly. I'd like some real food outside of this hotel. But what can you do? I'm stuck here.
All right.
Oh well.
That was depressing.
Yeah.
Let's get to some questions.
Thanks for bringing all that fun, Jose.
I aim to please, gentlemen.
Hold on. One moment. Let's get our little...
Let's pull up our first question.
Hey, look at us. Look at us. Look how cute we look down there.
People can't see us all the time, Case. Okay? Some people just listen to this.
One moment. Ooh, that seems small.
Pete, provide us with the on hold music.
Questions.
All right, there's our theme song, and you know what, I'm gonna go straight to our YouTube comments from longtime commenter
Trumbo.
Oh no, not Trumbo.
Is that El Kukui Holloway?
Yeah.
Most underrated fight tonight. So he's obviously talking about UFC Jacksonville, headlined by Anthony Smith versus Glover Teixeira. Pete, I'll start with you. What is the most underrated fight to look out for on UFC Jacksonville?
I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to Brian Keller v. Hunter Azure because he's the Crystal Crew. It would be a disgrace for me not to mention Brian Keller, the Tiger's Eye ambassador for the East Coast of America. I can't wait for that. I love when this guy fights undefeated fighters. I feel like it's really playing into his storyline at the moment. He's taking on all these up-and-comers. He wants that Sean O'Malley fight, and I feel as though a win over Azure plays into him being this contender series hunter, as he was talking to us about on Eurobash this week. So I'm really looking forward to that, and it's on nice and early for our European viewers. You'll probably get that one before midnight, so tune into that one, definitely.
Casey, we did a preview show with Laura Sanko and Mike Heck. I was, of course, on it, but you weren't on it, so you weren't allowed to answer this question. What is the most underrated fight on this card?
You know, I am I'm actually super excited. I want to see Drew Dober versus Axel Hernandez because I just don't know what that fight's going to bring. I'm hoping it's going to be an exciting striking battle and not just Hernandez using his. I assume he has a slight wrestling advantage or at least a top control advantage. If he wins that way, he wins that way. But I'm hoping it's going to be kind of a giant slugfest. I'm really interested, actually. Ben Rothwell versus OSP. Really, that's kind of a freak show match in a sense. It's like I've been, you know, we've been here working MMA for the last 15 years, and not one time did I say it. I looked at the stars at night and go, you know what? OSP should fight Ben Rothwell. Never said it once, but it's happening as a co-main event for the UFC Fight Night. So I'm like, heck, I'm just curious, and I'm also happy that. Like you said, Crystal Crew member Brian Kelleher is fighting. What's the gentleman's name fighting?
Hunter Azure.
Azure. But Azure is normally a 35er too, right?
Yeah, so they're both going up the featherweight.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that the UFC allowed these guys to fight a weight class up. Two bantamweights fighting at featherweight because I don't know if we want to get into the Carl Robertson thing right now, but I just think it's a very dangerous time for big weight cuts. Right now, right. And it's unnecessary. It's just so have everyone fight a weight class up, bantamweights fight at featherweight. Vittori is 85er, so yeah, 85ers should fight at 205 or at least 195. Just change it so they don't do these massive weight cuts during these very difficult training times. Those are my exciting.
Yeah, help. Sorry. How about the situation? I know Robertson's in a terrible situation there, but how about Marvin Vettori? He traveled to London, was there for a day, gets sent home, was scheduled to fight in April, gets ready for that, pulled fight. Now he's after traveling to Florida and his fight's pulled off on the day, essentially. That is a rough deal of the cards for me as well.
Oh, yeah, his virtual media day scrum, he said after 5 months of asking, I finally get a fight, and then look what happens. They make weight, he thinks they're going to fight. They talked a lot of trash. Carl Roberson, I think, made the mistake of talking trash back after missing weight. Never want to see that. He was like, bring that energy. And everyone's like, you missed weight, man. Like, you have nothing. You can't say anything.
He gave up 20%. He's now allowed to talk shit. I don't care about that.
He paid good money for that shit.
He's like, so I disagree with that. You pay money, I can say any shit I want. But, of course, unfortunately, I guess the rehydration process didn't go so well. And we haven't heard yet if the gentlemen are getting paid. I hope they're getting paid. But that's another topic. And,
I'm really excited for the Chase Sherman-Isaac Villanueva fight. I think someone's going to sleep in the first round in that fight. Chase Sherman, former bare-knuckle heavyweight champion, if people forgot, is making his return to the UFC. If you saw him on the scale, he looked like he was in the best shape I've ever seen him in my life. I'm excited for that because someone's going to bed. Obviously, Brian Kelleher. The Sajara Eubanks Sarah Morris fight's interesting. It might not be the most exciting, but any bantamweight fight in the women's division is, I think the stakes are really high because they're running out of contenders. So you can win three in a row and you could have a title fight. So that fight is really fascinating just for the stakes at play. And then, of course, Ricky Simone, Ray Borg. I mean, I think who doesn't love that fight? Ricky Simone's off. He's lost two in a row, but it was to Uriah Faber and I want to say Rob Font, but I'm not 100% off the top of my head. So it's like loses to a Hall of Famer, loses to a top 10 guy, cuts his mullet off because he needs a fresh thing going on. So it's like he loses two in a row. He needs to reinvent himself. And then, of course, Ray Borg made weight after his run of misfortune on the scale. So, yeah, super fast, former title contender, 125. So there's a lot of fascinating fights on this card.
With all these salons and barbershops closed, why would Ricky Simone cut his hair? I have serious questions.
I think someone cut it for him because it was very neat. It was very neatly, like it was cut, but there were still like designs in the back and stuff. So I think someone cut it maybe in his room or something. Like I ran into Francis Ngannou. Before his fight, and he was like, I was like, get your fresh cut. And he goes, bro, this isn't a cut. And it's like, you can see the designs are in there, but it's clear. It's definitely not what we're used to seeing. Most surprising thing about UFC 249, hashtag the A side from the C side.
It happened.
Yeah, it happened. That's a big surprise. But PT, what was the biggest surprise from the night of fights from you?
The biggest surprise from the night of fights. I knew Bryce Mitchell was a very good grappler. I didn't know he's that good of a grappler. I didn't know he was that brilliant. He is brilliant. I've never seen a person move into arm triangles and twisters so effortlessly. He didn't need a finish for me. I could have watched him grappling for an hour solid. Charlie Roses, as I like to call him, is a fantastic grappler as well. He's shocked me many times before. He shocked me before in Boston. Like, I remember being at a fight once and he was the underdog. He pulled off a submission, I believe. So I was really, really impressed with him. And yeah, I'm sure I can think of a lot more other shocking moments, but that one to me was a big eye opener. I know he got that twister before in his, but I think that performance was absolutely unbelievable. And he's brilliant. I can't wait to watch more of him.
Casey, biggest surprise from UFC 249.
I wasn't no real surprises, honestly. I would say Bryce Mitchell. That we have all our we have our internal predictions of who's gonna win, who we think is gonna win, and you know sometimes like I had Michelle Waterson winning, and I thought she actually won the fight, but you know I wasn't like way off my
same
pick.
Here.
But the Charles Rosa, I was pretty confident Rosa was gonna beat Mitchell. I was not a big Mitchell guy. I thought he was kind of one dimensional, or you could once you stop that, you know you'll defeat him. But you couldn't. But Rosa could not stop that. I scored it 30-24. That was in a dominating, exciting 30-24. Not just I'm lying on top of you, you know, 30-24. It's like it was. I mean, heck, that couldn't have been a 30-20. I mean, the grappling domination was just insane. I think
one sided
of the 15 minutes of fighting, I think Rosa was most likely defending a submission. What 14 minutes and 50 seconds at least. And maybe those other 10 seconds, it was neutral. At not one point in that 15 minutes, there was Rosa in an advantageous position, which is incredible, I think. And Bryce Mitchell just looks like a much better athlete. And we knew he had the technical skills and just the tenacity, but looks like his athleticism and just his ground awareness. He's got a very high level fight IQ on the ground. And
I think that's
if Charles Rosa wasn't a black belt, that was like that fight wouldn't have lasted like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It was
incredible. I think the really impressive thing as well. Sometimes we see really good grapplers, like really good submission specialists. Anytime he wanted Charles Rosa on the ground, he got him there. Blast double. Incredible takedowns, incredibly explosive, and that'll speak to the athleticism that Casey was talking about. And he's already got a rabid fan base, because I was looking at about the media picks in general, and I saw a lot of people talking about Charles Rosa, and I put up on Twitter like, well, it's a lot of people going for Charles Rosa tonight, and I swear to God, I had lots of people, hey, fuck you, man, for even saying that I saw people picking Charles Rosa. And one guy in particular, some fucking lunatic, anytime I tweeted for the rest of the night, he just kept on putting that tweet underneath where I was like, I see people are picking Charlie Rosa, and he's like, what about this asshole? Are you going to address the elephant in the fucking room? I was like, oh my God, someone give that man a drink. Fucking hell.
It's interesting. It's well, like I was at the UFC Boston card that Charles Rosa won. That was his last fight before the Mitchell fight, and he said, "I have the best grappling in the division." That is what Charles Rosa said. That's knowing he said that makes that fight so much more impressive to me for Bryce Mitchell. Imagine if he got him in another twister. That would be insane. Back to back twisters on a black belt.
He was so close. I've never seen someone defend a twister so far deep so many times. Like, he was just trying to get his head, like if Bryce had got the head on his arm underneath his head for the crank, it was over. And he was in that situation where he's trying to get his hand under many times, I think maybe four or five times. So in like, I know he lost the fight emphatically, but I was fucking really impressed with Charles Rosa not getting submitted. I was like, this fella, that's a real fighter, man. It was over on every level, but he was still like, I'm not getting submitted tonight. And I do respect the fuck out of that.
Charles Rosa is the submission version of a beating that Tony Ferguson took standing. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. That's exactly.
I was really impressed with Lexi Olenek. Came in 227 pounds and beat the crap out of Fabricio Werdum. An impressive, not like a barn burner fight, but I was very impressed with Olenek. Came in 10 pounds lighter. Like, he's weighed 227 at heavyweight going to fight Werdum inside an octagon.
That Werdum looked like, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Olenek. It was a great performance. I thought he was going to get whooped up too. I thought he was going to get beat up on the feet from Werdum. Yeah. But that looked like the Fabricio Werdum that fought Junior Dos Santos. If you remember that fight, he kind of tubby and just like looked like he just went in there going just on his own jiu-jitsu skill set, hoping that would win him the fight. But yeah, Werdum, I think Verdum's layoff was not didn't benefit him.
Not at all.
I think a lot of credit should go to the Olenek's team. As Jose said, he was down a lot of weight. He looked physically better than ever. And the fact that he knew if he let Werdum get his jab going, say like Werdum did against Travis Brown, the fight was going to be over. And he smothered him every second of the fight. And you can see how much it was taken out of him by him lying down between rounds. Absolutely incredible. But I think his team knew and they had planned for that output. That's probably why you saw him lose so much weight. And look, he's not the most technical striker in the world, but his effort, his output won that fight. And Werdum never got going. And it's probably one of the greatest wins of Olenek's career, and credit to him. And it's just about now, will we ever see Werdum fight in the higher echelons of that division again, really, after a performance like that? That's the questions I have anyway.
What in the world was that comment, Casey?
Well, it was a good comment, but then I noticed the avatar, so I was like, I don't know if I should put that up there. Oh, your dad. User from YouTube commenter, your daddy, thought Werdum would have it easy with the knees due to Olenek's head movement, which was a great observation. That's what I thought too. But then but I saw your daddy and I was like, oh, I don't know. I can't really see that avatar. So I should probably take this off the screen.
Sounds like a cool guy.
I was surprised at how much better Greg Hardy looked. Like, he obviously didn't look like a world beater, but you can clearly see like there's some movement up in terms of his talent or skills that he possessed. He went 15 rounds with Jorgen De Castro. I thought Jorgen De Castro was going to destroy him. I was at his contender series fight.
I just thought
De Castro was a better fighter.
Did De Castro? Did he?
He broke his foot though.
Yeah,
he
broke his foot or toe or something.
Yeah, it looked like he had some serious something happened. Like a big, it was a big drop off between the first and second round, right? To the point where like the second round, like almost nothing happened, and I was just like, I remember sitting at home watching it. I was like, wait, I think Hardy won this round because De Castro didn't.
Yeah.
You're kind of just waiting for De Castro, like, okay, he's getting his breath back. Because Castro looked great in the first round. He just looked too small.
Yeah.
You know, he just couldn't get in. But he clearly looked like the better striker. He was moving faster. His feet were moving faster. But once the injury, and I'm assuming an injury, it was, yeah. You know what
that's,
I want to
say?
Am I crazy to think I would love to see Greg Hardy versus Olenek? Is that weird? I love weird matches.
I think that's leading a lamb to slaughter.
Who's the lamb? I have no idea.
Hardy. I don't think Greg Hardy's, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say Olenek's grappling is way, I don't know if he's a 10, but he's at least an 8 or 9, if not a 10, with all the submission he has and the crazy submissions he has. And he's beaten Werdum. He's beaten Mark Hunt. He's beaten some really impressive fighters. And to throw Greg Hardy in, who's basically been fighting for a little more in the UFC for a little more than a year, maybe MMA in general for like 3 years. And Alexei Olenek is the only fighter on the UFC roster that's fought in 4 decades. He fought in the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s. And now he has 2 fights in the 2020s.
The 1890s.
So, yeah, don't make it the 1890s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Greg Hardy versus Olenek. I kept seeing that. I'm like, Hardy would get mauled. You get choked. You get the oxygen squeezed out of him.
Some of us are here for that, though.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. You want to see a guy get beat up and want to see him get choked out. That's they're mixing the martial arts. You know, come on.
The thing with the Hardy fight, like, I find it hard to be like, oh, yeah, he's really improved so much when an injury to his opponent, I feel, you know, cost him the victory a bit. Like, not like, I mean, yes, he's definitely made improvements. He's a lot more composed, I feel.
Yeah,
but the fight I'd love to see is Cyril Gane versus Greg Hardy. I'm here for that. I'm here for that. That's a serious, serious fight. Look, they've put Greg Hardy in against way more experienced fighters already. Cyril Gane has moved over from a striking background. Obviously, we have the international restrictions at the moment, but if we could do any fight, put Cyril Gane in against Greg Hardy. I have a feeling Cyril Gane is going to be huge, especially as legalization as MMA in France is going down. I feel like he's going to be a huge player. So yeah, use Greg Hardy's star to propel this guy, because I think he's a big deal and he needs a name like that. And a kind of a fight that's competitive to really show people what he can do.
Petey, I want to throw a question up here real quick. Just because I really want to get this elephant. How did the guy say the elephant in the fucking room?
Yeah.
Because I think we can answer this quickly and then move on, because we are getting lots of questions about this. But I don't want to focus on this because there are some legal issues. But let's just talk about it very quickly. Okay. Oops.
Are you guys allowed to be honest about COVID testing at the UFC? Hashtag disparaging. Yes.
Yes.
Hashtag disparaging.
Yes. I can comfortably say that if I see that, in no way, shape, or form does that contract inhibit what I would report. I'm 1,000% comfortable. If I see something that is happening, I'm going to report on it. I'm not going to ignore it. I think we all would do the same thing. If I saw, and this didn't happen, I don't want people to say this happened. If I saw all of a sudden the UFC just taking all the COVID tests and just throwing them in a dumpster after they were tested, you better believe I'm going to say something. Like, that's worth, like, I don't care. Like, Dana White didn't wear a mask. I think that was stupid. I am comfortable saying that. I am comfortable saying that the UFC has temp checks me every single day. I have not been behind the curtains to watch every single COVID test. I took a COVID test. I was told I came back negative for antibodies and COVID. People are asking me to report on fighters getting tested. Everything is behind a curtain. I can't just walk behind there. I have like this name, this wristband means I got temp checks, but that's it. I can't just be like reporter coming through out of the way. I want to see this COVID test. I just can't do that. But there is in no way, shape, or form do I feel inhibited by my – like, I don't feel my reporting would be inhibited at all by that contract whatsoever, at all. And a lot of people, I agree. I saw everyone talking about it on Twitter. I saw it on the internet. Y'all can just call me. No one called me about it. That's what I have to say about it.
Here's the thing. Everyone's saying, why aren't you talking about this? I know Jose's been on about 5 or 6 shows talking about this probably already. Don't be stupid. This is not the media's fault. This is the UFC for putting a ridiculous contract out there's fault, as far as I'm concerned. I haven't signed shit because I'm not there. But that's the situation here. I don't know how this has turned into the media or this and that again. It's stupid. Think about this. Who's forcing this issue after people have flown across the country to be there? It's not the media. It's the UFC. If you have a criticism, it's for them.
Cool.
There you go.
Got it. You will get honest COVID testing related information from MMA Fighting. Do not worry.
Yeah, with a dash of fist fighting on the side.
Next question.
From Pound D8, hashtag the A side.
Big
Did you guys
Dublin
feel
eight.
That UFC 249 was more intense because of the empty arena? Keep up the good work, guys. And PT, you're the best lad. And then he had a scissors emoji.
Oh, legend. Here, have one of these. Have one of these.
There you go. So before I give my answer, because I was there, I'm sure my answer is I know my answer is more different than you. What did you guys make of the empty arena fights on through the broadcast?
I'll talk about the main event. The main event, I see. I think that fight was so high level, so intense, so violent that if there were 80,000 people there versus 0 people there at home, me sitting there, I was just as stressed out. I was just like, Tony still got a chance. Oh my God, Tony's still alive. How's Justin doing this? You know, it was like the intensity level was exactly the same. I don't know if it would have gone up or down. It was different, but it was equal. And yeah, that's my kind of my feeling on a big fight like that.
PC, what did you make of the whole ordeal without the crowd?
I enjoyed it sometimes, and you know, it's obviously the middle of the night here. You're talking about watching fights at 5-6 a.m. And some of it can be a struggle when you know, you don't have the benefits of the crowd, and sometimes you're feeding off their energy a little bit when you're watching these fights. I found it very interesting, to be honest. And very, very different. And I was talking to fighters about this. There was some big moments, obviously, in the fights. And I wonder if the crowd was there, would have amplified some moments, like as in Tony Ferguson's uppercut at the end of the second round. Could you imagine the crowd, the noise they would have made there in that situation, after him pretty much chasing the whole fight up to that point? I mean, it felt as though there was no momentum shift after that. I don't know if the crowd being there would change that, but it certainly felt like there was just some parts of it. I spoke to you about on Eurobash as well, Jose, about like when Cejudo retired, and I know he told you he really liked the fact there was no one there, but all these big ceremonious moments, I guess, didn't feel the same without a crowd. But I thought it was very interesting. I wonder how I'll feel about it, say, in 3 months' time, like how much I'll miss the crowd then. I think I'll miss them a lot, to be honest.
It was the most fascinating fight card I've ever watched. I sat Octagon side, so it was me and John Morgan are pretty much the only reporters Octagon side. I was behind the blue corner during the fights, but I was next to the red corner. I mean, I was behind the blue corner during between rounds, but as you guys know, the corner's kind of off to the sides when they run in, and then they go to the other corner. So I was behind the blue corner between rounds, and I was behind the red corner during the fight, so I could hear Tony's corner while he's fighting, and I hear Trevor Whitman, Justin Gaethje's head coach, between rounds. Man, Trevor Whitman is one of, if not the best corners I've ever seen in that fight. That fight was unbelievable. Like the way he was talking to Justin, there was a moment where Justin Gaethje was like, man, this is a fun fight, like between rounds. And then he goes to sit down and he's like smiling, and you could see him kind of like soaking in the fight. And then Whitman is just like, he's like screaming. I can hear this all. He just goes, Justin, right here. And Justin like locks in. And he goes, the last time you got this comfortable, you got knocked out. And Justin Gaethje goes, happened twice. And he goes, hey, don't forget that. And then he started to talk about the actual like actual instructions on the fight, like right hand, left, this and that. So it was very interesting to hear the actual corners between rounds without all the crowding. The low blow was very interesting. Without all the boos surrounding, you could hear Justin Gaethje's like screams of agony when he took a low blow, and Tony Ferguson being like, you poked me in the eye in the first round, get back in here. And then Tony Ferguson talked a lot between rounds, telling the ref he didn't need 60 seconds. He's like, I don't need 60 seconds. I'm ready to go right now. So it is an experience I'll never forget. I could hear the commentaries clearly. I could hear both corners clearly. I could hear the fighters talking. The punches were unbelievable. The one, I think it was after the low blow, when Tony Ferguson came out with like a body hook, like a hook to the body, and it was just like thud. It was like punching a piece of meat. My body has never like tensed up so more after hearing a punch than that punch. It was just fist on meat, and it was just happened to be Justin Gaethje's ribs. So it is without a doubt an experience I'm never going to forget. It was super fascinating to watch.
All righty.
Thanks, Pound D8. You're a legend.
There you go.
Oh.
From Susanna, when does the event start? How many hours from now? So confused.
4 hours, 20 minutes.
I believe it starts a little later now because of the Vittori fight has been pulled. So let me see. I believe it's a little different.
Is everything on ESPN or ESPN Plus? I have no idea. I kind of find these things out like about 5 minutes before. I just go.
Yeah, it's I believe it's like 5 or 5:30.
Eastern.
Yeah, Eastern. Immediate. I'm getting there at 5. Like that's when we're that's when we're leaving. So it might start at 5:30 or it's a mess. You're not wrong. It's a mess.
All right. Next question.
What percentage chance would you give Justin against Khabib? Also, what do you do with Francis Ngannou if you are the UFC matchmaker? So we'll start with the first question. Pete, what percentage chance do you give Justin against Khabib Nurmagomedov?
35%.
Why 35?
Don't know. It just felt right in the moment.
slightly more than a third chance.
Yeah.
So if they fight 10 times, you think Justin wins 3.5 times? Is that basically?
3.5 times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly 3.5.
So, right, but so you would say that Khabib is a heavy favorite then against Justin.
Yeah. Yeah. I think honestly, like Justin's an incredible wrestler. Obviously he's very well decorated, but it's not a wrestling match, you know. It's not a wrestling match, and I don't think Khabib wrestles in a conventional way either. Like it's a complete onslaught. All the things we saw Justin Gaethje doing brilliantly on Saturday night, and he was absolutely brilliant. He was poetry in motion. You know, the fight has to be taking place on the feet for that to happen. And look, he could stop Khabib. He can be the first man since Gleison Tibau or whoever it was to stop a Khabib takedown. And if that happens, it's an amazing fight. But, you know, look, you were there, Casey, when Khabib fought Dustin Poirier. It was outrageous to watch the man. The onslaught, like, I mean, you can't breathe for a second once that man gets a hold of you. And I think we're all guilty of a bit of a recency bias when a card's just happened. And I just think Khabib's one of the best fighters in the world at the moment. I don't see anyone beating him at lightweight right now. And I guess that will make it all the bigger scalp for whoever manages to do it, you know?
You know, everyone was, as much as like people were so excited for Khabib versus Ferguson because of all the, you know, ups and downs and, you know, like, honestly, to me as a fan, I was like, okay, that's a fight. But I was so, I thought that fight was like Khabib. I thought Khabib would beat Ferguson 9 out of 10 times, one of those type things. Khabib versus Gaethje though, dude, I am just, that's my dream fight. I've been wanting that fight to happen because like, I think Khabib is like a perfect lightweight. It's like, no one can beat Khabib. No one can stop his takedowns. No one be able to withstand his top pressure. But then at the same time, I go, you know what? Gaethje is the perfect fighter. No one can take him down. He's so tough. If he touches you, you will die. You like that? You know, it's like, and someone like Ferguson. Like I predicted, I thought Gaethje was going to knock out Ferguson in the first round. I was very confident Gaethje would win. And obviously, Ferguson lasted longer, but I still don't think I was wrong in my prediction in a sense because I thought it was just going to be too much for Ferguson to handle. Now, it's one of those things, every round starts on their feet. That means every round, Ferguson has to get Gaethje down. And we've seen, yeah. One of the storylines that people were thought how Ferguson Gaethje would go is like, well, Ferguson would get beat up in the early rounds, but as they get tired, Gaethje would start fading, and that's when Ferguson comes and he's going to finish Gaethje, you know, in the third, fourth, fifth round. You know, no one thought Ferguson would win early, you know. So, but now we've seen a short notice Justin Gaethje, semi short notice, have amazing cardio. So every round, Khabib will have to get Gaethje down. That means he's going to have to withstand some big punches. And I don't know how the fight's going to go because I just, as good as we think Gaethje is, his wrestling is, we still haven't really seen it. We still haven't seen him face a fighter where like, all I'm going to do is try to take you down. I will throw some punches to scare you a little bit. Obviously, Khabib does have some dangerous overhands, and he can't hurt you on the feet like he hurt McGregor. But we've never seen Gaethje, at least against an A-level fighter, where like I will take Gaethje down. That's my only game plan. So that's why I think this is such an incredible fight, and I can't wait till it gets booked. I'm just – I give it a coin flip. I give it 50-50 to answer the question. I don't know who's going to win that fight because I think those two guys, technical Justin Gaethje is an amazing, unstoppable fighter, has Khabib.
I think it's about 60-40 because we've seen Justin Gaethje lose, and yeah, he wasn't technical. We haven't seen Khabib lose ever. He's undefeated. Justin Gaethje's been knocked out twice in the UFC. One of those was a 3-round fight. One of them, of course, was a main event against Dustin Poirier and Eddie Alvarez, respectively. Not bums, obviously, but I slightly favor Khabib. I'd say 60-40 Khabib. Got to go the undefeated champion.
And it's the thing, what Casey just brought up there as well, about a wrestler. Daniel Cormier has famously said in the past that you can't wrestle for 15 minutes solid without taking a round off. Like, if you're going to do that, if you're going to wrestle the shit out of someone for 15 minutes, you're going to have to take a round off. We saw Habib do it against Conor. Mm-hmm. He took basically took the third round off, was it? Or one of those rounds. That's going to give Gaethje a fucking huge opportunity, you'd imagine, right? Like, it's and you say technical Gaethje there. That reminds me of C-level Kane and post-USADA Vitor. Is that the new one? Technical Gaethje is the new Gaethje, one?
Yeah.
I love it.
Dude, when Justin Gaethje sometimes starts having too much fun, he starts brawling and then he gets hit and then he goes to Trevor Whitman and he looks like a kid that just got busted, you know, taking some candy out of a cookie jar or something.
Yeah, he said sorry.
Like, I'm sorry, coach. I know.
Yeah. But to answer this individual's second question, what do you do with Francis Ngannou? Pizzi.
Just tell him he's lovely and just stay over there. Don't come near me. I'm terrified of you. Don't even move slightly towards me. He is terrifying. I didn't envy Daniel Cormier having to sit there as the heavyweight champion and kind of go, oh shit. I thought Jairzinho was such a slick kickboxer. I was like, this could be a very interesting fight. And then you're like, oh yeah, forgot that he does that. That was terrifying. Haunting as I thought it was. It actually scared me. That woke me up. Believe me, that fight, I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. I just kept on watching the replay going, oh, holy shit, man. What is wrong with this guy? it's just unforgivable power. Just unbelievable.
I think that fight.
Casey, what are you doing with Francis?
It's all dependent. It's up to Francis, honestly. It's up to DC and Stipe.
Here's what I think is gonna. No matter what happens in the DC Stipe fight, Francis's next fight or Stipe's next fight after DC will be Francis. Whether it's just a matter of whether it's for a vacant belt or he's defending the belt. Yeah. That is because if DC wins and retires and vacates the belt, Stipe is getting the first shot. Francis is number one contender. Stipe beats DC and DC retires. Francis gets the next shot. So win or lose against DC, it's Stipe Francis next.
I think right now Francis is the best heavyweight in the world. I know he doesn't have the belt. I know he lost to Stipe, but I think of those three gentlemen, Francis Ngannou is the best heavyweight in the UFC, in the world actually, right now. I think that. And these the only reason I don't say DC is because I think just DC, unfortunately, it's just time. It's just he's just old.
He's on
the wrong side of 40. It's just he's just if this was prime DC, which I think we're on agreement, it's not, because that's, you know, I just don't think I think that the physicality, the strength of Francis Ngannou, and just him getting better as a fighter, more confident. I just think he will beat DC. I think he will beat Stipe. And if I was DC, I mean, that's just my. I mean, I know a lot of people go, oh, you know, what about the first fight? You know, he's gonna get taken down. We don't know. We don't know how good. Francis is on the ground yet. We don't know. But I think he is. And I think that his power is just so off the charts, dangerous. Like every round starts on their feet. And I think he learned a lot from that loss. Like we all say, people learn a lot from their losses. And I think if I'm DC, you just wait for Stipe, because I still think the Stipe rematch pays more money than fighting Francis Ngannou. I don't how long Stipe going to be out.
And you might not. And I don't think Francis is going to murder you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Stipe is going to murder you. Francis will.
Yeah.
But I asked Niall McGrath this earlier in the week, and like, I think I agree with you, Casey, but I guess in my head, we've had four first round knockouts probably in a row now for Francis. And that's amazing, but we already knew he could do that. We already knew he could knock a man dead like he did to Jairzinho the other night. So why I mean, I'm just asking this in general. I don't have a problem with it. I'm just, why do we think, because I agree with you, I probably would pick Ngannou if he fought Stipe. Why would we pick him? We haven't really seen the rest of his game develop that much, you know?
Well, like, he's still also, going I in. I want to mention, like, go watch that fight. Go watch, like, his punches. Go watch the knockout punch. His chin is, like, right there. He's, like, winding up, like Todd Duffy.
Yeah, it's not very technical.
It's not technical. He's basically leading with his chin and then coming with like a haymaker. So,
but that's what makes him so dangerous. He can be technical, right? But when he has to just brawl and fight like you're Jeff Goldblum on a street fighting some shirtless dude.
Oh yeah.
Like if you just got a brawl, Francis Ngannou can do that. If he needs to be tighter and technical and slow it down, you know, I think he can do that too. But like I said, no, I don't know if he's better on the ground. I don't know if he can control his cardio as much as he can on the ground. But I really think that when Stipe took him down and started holding him down for like four rounds, like 20 minutes, I think, he couldn't control his cardio. The skill set wasn't there. How long ago is that fight now? 3 years, whatever, 2 years?
That was UFC 220. We just had UFC 249.
So at least 2.5 years ago or so. I really believe Francis is just a much better fighter. And don't forget, remember, Stipe took a hell of a beating in that first round. Remember at the post-press conference, for that fight, you look at Ngannou, you look at Stipe, you wouldn't have thought Francis Ngannou won the fight. Stipe was all busted up. I mean, he won the fight, obviously, but like, I mean, you gotta go through hell to beat Francis. So unless you get that weirdo fight with Derek Lewis, and we're not going to talk about that.
Next question, Casey. Thank you, Sports Week MMA.
Where's Francis Johnson's? Oh, we kind of just answered that. Oh, you know what? I like this question. I get it. Oh, hold on. Gotta move. Oh no. Hold on. I lost my background.
Will Triple C be inducted into the Hall of Fame within a year from now? No, because he's gonna come back and fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, couldn't have answered that better.
But I think the better question is, Triple C. He's a Hall of Famer, right?
Yeah, without a doubt.
That's kind of
There is zero argument against him being in the Hall of Fame.
I gotta say, like when.
But the thing is, right? It's like they do the same shit with Colby Covington. They let the character feed into what they think of the fighter. Like I know people who can't stand Cejudo, and that's all they think about. They just say, I can't wait till he loses. And I know people who hate Colby, and they can't wait till he loses. And Darren Till's talked about it before. He's an exceptional fighter, Colby Covington. There's no doubt about it. And Henry Cejudo is absolutely unbelievable. It's a real loss not having him fight. He's an incredible fighter. He's shown us new tools every time he's in there. He seems to be constantly evolving. Look at the run of wins he's on. It's absolutely exceptional. That's a big loss to the sport. And you know, if he does retire, and to be honest, like I think he'll take some time off and he'll be able to get out of that character for a while. Like, look, he told you guys at the press conference after the fights that he doesn't like this, portraying this kind of deal. It's hard work. Like, I'm sure it is. But I feel like, if, say, this kind of tournament of sorts plays out with Jan Sandhagen, Moraes, and Sterling, they're going to need Cejudo to come back and verify these guys afterwards. He's going to validate them. That's when he could possibly get the money he wants. I doubt he gets the money he wants, because whoever gets the money they want in the UFC, but he will get something, and he'll be brought back for that. I do feel like he will be in a good position to put his bargaining chips down and get a better deal if he does return in the future to validate whoever is the next champion, I guess.
He'll definitely get a better deal. I think what will happen, he'll be out for like a year and a half. And so say the bantamweight division moves on. Say Aljamain Sterling beats Jan. Say Jan wins. Say whatever. All that's going to happen, there's going to be Cejudo sitting in his condo somewhere just on Twitter going, LOL, I'm the real champ. Doesn't matter. And he's going to basically devalue that bantamweight belt until he comes back and actually defends it. I mean, that was McGregor's. McGregor did that for forever, right? You know, by not defending the 45 belt.
He didn't even need to be the champion.
Didn't need a champion. Even though he left the division, he's like, I'm still the best featherweight. You know, he's like, well, fight me. It's like, you know, and eventually we got over that and everything because he had his losses and at 55. But if Cejudo retires at a young age, 33 relative, that the value of the bantamweight belt will definitely be devalued until he actually loses it. So I think
you're not wrong.
Yeah. So it's smart prize fighting by Henry Cejudo. Smart, very smart prize fighting. That's how you do it. It sucks for fans, honestly, because you want to see the best fight the best. You know, I want more fights. But for paychecks, for bank accounts, Cejudo is a champion right now, or winning. Oh, okay. Let's fly through these. We're blabbing too much.
Oh, it's the fast round. Oh, you know this one was shit, boys. I'm ready to go for this.
All right, here we go. La 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 la. Oh, hey. We can't answer this, but let's do it too long. Again.
Henry, didn't realize Henry asked for a raise. Can you shed more light on his salary and what you think he's worth to the UFC and lower weight division? He seems to be coming into his prime, both pipeline and skill. Do you think he will fight again? My answer is yes.
Yes.
What are the questions?
I don't believe he was even the highest paid fighter at UFC 249.
No.
Got about a quarter of a million, did he?
What?
Got about a quarter of a million, did he?
Something like that. I think Cejudo, Ferguson was the highest paid.
Do you think you'll fight again, Casey? You've already said, yeah.
Yeah, I think he'll fight again. I don't think he fights for less than a million guaranteed, which he deserves. Which he deserves, and the UFC is making enough money right now because, according to reports, that UFC sold 700,000 pay-per-views, which is an incredible number. That's something like $40 million revenue or whatever. With very limited promotion. So they had to spend almost no money in promotion. And apparently all the COVID testing cost about, I think, $150,000. So I think UFC has plenty of money in the bank to pay Henry Cejudo a big paycheck. But oh, man.
Next question.
Where'd the background go? There we go. did we answer this?
From Sean Denny. Did the hashtag the A side? Did the empty arena help Gaethje keep his head? I know women did an amazing job keeping him in check, but if you added the crowd energy and noise, could he have lost the head a bit? I know PT mentioned something similar, momentum at the end of round two on hashtag Eurobats. I don't think so. I think Whitman is a good enough coach, and this like hyper focused and technical Gaethje that we saw against Ferguson is what we've been seeing his last three fights. I think he would have been maybe more hyped, but I think Whitman, like what he was saying between rounds blew me away so much, and how much he got Justin Gaethje to focus. I think the crowd there wouldn't have played. I don't think it would have made Gaethje go crazy and lose his mind.
I just think he would have done two backflips off the cage when he won. That's about it.
Yeah.
Instead of his, I don't know what he did. He just climbed over, then climbed back.
He was going to do it, but then he slipped and he just hopped over the fence.
Okay, let's go into this.
This will probably be the last one because we're running up on time. Cruz versus Peterson, in my opinion, there are two things that will end a referee's job because those are unforgivable. Those two are getting bribed to influence a fight. Fights outcome and being drunk on the job. Cruz this weekend accused Keith Peterson of one of those horrendous mistakes as he referred to him smelling like booze. If he indeed thinks Peterson was drunk, why didn't he report this? The athletic commission, who will definitely overturn the fight outcome if it's true. If he didn't actually think Peterson was drunk, what's the punishment for Cruz falsely accusing the referee of the worst thing he can do and thereby altering the way everyone looks at this guy doing his job in the future? Well, I don't think anything will happen to Cruz in this situation. I haven't seen Keith Peterson at all since then. He was at this hotel. I just haven't seen him since the fight. So, yeah, to set the scene, Dominic Cruz accused referee Keith Peterson of smelling like cigarettes and alcohol in the back before his fight. Said he wouldn't even look him in the eye and this and that, and that was a big red flag to Cruz. So, Pizza, your thoughts on the matter, and what should we do about this situation?
I think Dom Cruz, you know, I think that's it's a big thing to accuse someone of, and it's just, for Keith Peterson, you know, an accusation like that could definitely have repercussions on your career. So it's just so out of character for Dom for me. He's always been an amazing sportsman, and he still is. Like, I'm not taking that away from him, but it's just the fact that he came out and said this, and not immediately after the fight. You know, he had a few, you know, I know it came out in that Megan O'Leary interview, but he's had a few days and he's still talking about it. Like, I'm not questioning whether Dominic Cruz smelled that off the guy. You're going to smoke, it's not illegal. But, I mean, the drink thing is really bad, you know. So, I don't know. I feel like it's a very tough spot to prove either way that this wasn't the case or it was the case. But I feel sorry for Keith Peterson. I didn't have a problem with the stoppage. I understand why Dominic does, but it seems like a bit of a messy one for me, to be honest.
All right.
There you have it, folks.
Oh, wait. You're going to let me have the last one? That's a terrible idea. Yeah,
Grace's, nah, let's skip that one. Oh.
In your opinion, was any stoppage controversial outside of the A side? The only controversial one was the co-main event, and I don't think that was overly controversial. I mean, I get why Dominic clearly has some argument that he was getting back up to his feet, but, I mean, he got kneed in the face, and he fell down and was getting punched a whole bunch. So, I don't think it was overly controversial.
I think that stoppage sucked. I think Keith Peterson is a good ref, though.
There you go.
I do as well. I actually do think he's a really good ref.
So I think the stoppage sucked, and I feel bad for Dom, and no comment on the whole Smokey thing, but I guess I just don't know, to be honest. Mm. But I thought it was a bad stoppage, but it wasn't the worst stoppage, and I understand why Peterson stopped it, though. I understand what he saw, but I just thought it was a bad stoppage.
Is that it? Are we out of questions, Casey?
We ran
up a little. We're a little past time right now.
No, we're at 55 minutes. 202 local time. Let me look at YouTube comments. Real quick.
What do you think of me hair today, lads?
Who's Darren Till going to fight next, PT?
Probably Rob Whittaker, I guess.
When?
Fucking.
It's a Fight Island, I guess. I guess.
November.
There you go. Till v. Whittaker. Fight Island, November. PT's on record.
Who's next for Calvin Kattar?
I said this after Calvin's fight. I would love to see Calvin v. Yair. Or I'd also, but
brilliant.
But I've been
brilliant
waiting for Yair. I've been waiting for Yair v. Zabit for a little longer, and they're both coming off wins. So I kind of want Yair v. Zabit a little more, but I don't hate Calvin v. Yair at all.
What did you guys think of the Tony stoppage? Early, late, just on time.
Didn't have an issue with it. I don't think it was late. I don't think it was early at all. I think if it was going to get stopped, it could have been anywhere in that fifth round. But I think Herb Dean was the ref. He clearly saw something and stopped the fight when he thought. And I thought it was I was absolutely fine with the stoppage.
Oh, definitely wasn't early. I think we're going if it's late or just on time. I don't think anyone thought it was early. No one that's.
I thought it was right. Ferguson never went down. He still had – Herb Dean was saving Tony from himself for not falling down or not – like most fighters would crumble, but Tony Ferguson wanted to keep fighting.
But this – I was thinking about this today, actually, like how the idea of stoppages in MMA are just so – stoppages and damage is such a weird thing that I still don't quite understand, because we look at the damage Dom took, and the fight got stopped in the first – well, into the second round. And before that, the first 9 minutes, neither of them really took any significant damage. And then, one shot, was enough. The ref thought that was enough damage to stop the fight. But then we look how much damage that Tony Ferguson took. And we look at how much damage, say, Nico Price took. Like, it's just like the disparity in the amount of damage for a loss is just so different between fights. It's just. And I was watching fights of Esther and the Ferguson Gaethje fight, and I was like, dude, if this was boxing, this fight would have been over probably midway fourth round.
Yeah.
The corner want to throw the towel in. Like, for some reason, MMA, we let the fight, as long as they don't fall down, we let them take way more damage.
Yes.
I felt like refs and stoppages put too much weight in falling down in MMA, because falling down doesn't necessarily mean. That's not the end game. Like boxing, the whole point is to stay on your feet. MMA is not to stay on your feet. It's just to win the fight. So I think the idea of falling down is there's a little too much weight in it, especially for guys like Tony Ferguson, like Nate Diaz, guys who just don't have that button that just turns them off. So it's just I don't really have an answer. It's just weird.
I agree with you. I think everyone always wants the spectacle, right? They want the big knock, someone to be nearly half dead on the ground. Like, that's what people actually want. Like, casual people, anyway, people who don't consume the sport a lot, that's the way they expect MMA fights to finish. Like, someone kicking someone's face off into the next county or whatever.
Couple more questions.
So what does Aldo do if he doesn't get a title shot at 135? I see him going back up at 145. Am I the only one who wants to see Aldo versus Kattar? No, Aldo versus Faber, but it's not going to happen. because of Fight Island. It's international, so Aldo would have to fight an international bantamweight anyway, right?
No, well, Dana's been saying he's going to send Gaethje to Fight Island. We can't get international fighters in the States, but we can send American fighters there, apparently. I don't know if that's actually
Aldo versus Faber, 135. I've been saying that since Faber came back and Aldo dropped.
So down. Aldo's going to go from a title fight to fighting a guy that just got whooped up by Peter Yan?
Cool. Yes, you're going to fight a Hall of Famer. Fighting a Hall of Famer. Two Hall of Famers throwing down.
I don't know why he wants Cater v. Aldo. That's sinful as far as I'm concerned.
Ben Burroughs is also out there doing a lot of damage.
I don't know. I kind of like Cater Aldo. I don't know.
All right. There you go. And what's our next one?
Nah, whatever. We're good.
All right. That's it for time, guys. As always, Pizza, you want to say anything before we sign off on this episode of the A-Side? I got to get ready to go to the arena soon. So what you got to say?
Nothing. Just looking forward to going to the toilet after this, to be honest.
There you go. Pizzy. I mean, Casey, can you top Pizzy's promo?
Yes, yes. I just want to talk about what a unique opportunity we are as MMA fans to see that, because this won't happen again, maybe ever, hopefully. Well, we're going to see the best fighters in the world fight in empty arenas with no fans. So, and just to show you what a unique perspective that is, when the UFC, when they have cards, they send us footage. And to we can use for promotional, for like newsreels and things like that. And they sent us the video package from 249. Now, normally this is filled with crowd sounds and everything like that. But I'm gonna play this video. I want you to hear the sounds of the fight with no commentary. Because a lot of times you hear Rogan and Cormier yelling and stuff. But just listen to this. I just want you to listen to this. I think this is pretty remarkable. Hold on one moment. Turn up your speakers, guys. So we're going to let it loop one more time, but I just think this is just like, listen. Oh. This is why I just love the fact that there are no fans there. Not for every event, but we have this moment where we're going to have a few fight cards where there's no fans, no even like friends and family. It's literally just the corners and commission and other people who aren't going to be cheering. They're actually working. Everyone's working there. Like, there's not one person around the cage that isn't getting a paycheck in a sense. There's no fans. And I just think this is such a unique opportunity for fans. Because, I mean, I've seen high-level MMA in Japan. There's still fans. You still hear things. Even in the tough house, there's still the teammates cheering. The fact that you're never going to get – this is just the most raw – sounds you're ever going to see in high level MMA.
MMA ASMR.
And I didn't realize how hard Greg Hardy had hit Castro. Like, like that was like that hit. I should have knocked Castro out, honestly. That when he came out, that straight right.
That uppercut is gnarly, isn't it? Oh my god.
It was right in front of me. It was about 10 feet away from me.
So how do these sounds, do these bring back memories to you, Jose? Like,
they do, man. Like, I told you, like, that body shot that Ferguson hit on Gaethje, like, made my butthole clench. It was insane. I was like, oh! Like, it was the footwork, too. Like, you know what really sticks out of my mind was Jairzinho bouncing off the fence. Like, they didn't show that, obviously, but, like, the knockout blow, it wasn't him, like, yeah. It wasn't the punch, it was the body, it was the weight of a heavyweight falling down onto the canvas that stands out in my mind. So
the Nagano knockout wasn't the actual knockout, it was the silence after the knockout.
Yeah,
when everyone, because it wasn't cheers, it was like, I was like, oh my God, Nagano did it. Then you're like, oh my God, he killed a man. Now we have to worry about no Biggie Boy. Right. Is he okay? So I just like to hear just like silence. You just hear the pitter patter of the doctors walking in the cage. Woo, right. MMA, crazy sport. All right, Jose, do your cool sign off.
Well, I'm Jose. That's PT. That's Casey. This is going to be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, jazz. Of course, on YouTube. PT's going to sing us a song before he goes. He told me himself. If he doesn't sing, he hates everyone in the world. So, PT, play our theme music with your mouth. Casey, you sign us off. Boop, boop,
boop. Sing, PT.
Boop, 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 boop. I don't know this one. Boop, 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 boop. I'll give me enough time to get used to this. Boo, 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 doo, 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 doo,
boo, boo, boo. You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.